Dowski wrestled to free herself from the tape, and the Covenant closed in around her. Smoke swirled around the top of the butte as a Pelican pilot made use of his 70-millimeter chin gun to silence a Covenant gun emplacement. Satisfied that the Covenant plasma turret, a powerful weapon that could be easily deployed and recovered, was silent, he dropped down to within 4 feet of the top of the butte. 15 ODST helljumpers, 3 more than the Pelican's operational maximum, leapt from the Pelican's troop bay and fanned out. Cramming extra troops into a Pelican was a risky move, but Silva wanted to put as many soldiers as possible on the mesa, and Lieutenant Cookie Peterson knew his ship. The Pelican was still in reasonably good shape. He had the best maintenance crew in the Navy. What more could a pilot ask for? Peterson felt the dropship drift upward as the Marines bailed out, and he fought to keep the ship steady and level. He spotted movement in the landing zone. The chin gun, linked to his helmet sensors, followed the movement of Peterson's head. He spotted a column of Covenant troopers and fired. The heavy rotary cannon uttered a throaty roar and pounded the enemy formation into a puddle of blue-green paste. As the last of the helljumpers jumped off, the crew chief yelled, "Clear!" over the intercom. Peterson fired the ship's belly jets, demanded additional power from the twin turbine engines, and left the butte behind.
"This is Echo 136," the pilot said into his mic. "We are green, clean, and extremely mean. Over."
"Roger that," Wellesley replied emotionlessly. "Please return to waypoint 25 for another load of troopers, and if you're going to insist on poetry, try some Kipling. You might find some of it rather instructive. Over and out."
Peterson grinned, directed a one-fingered salute in the general direction of Battalion HQ, and banked the dropship into a wide turn. Resistance had slackened within minutes of the first landing, which allowed Lieutenant Melissa McKay and the surviving members of her company to advance upward. A significant number of the path's defenders were pulled away in a last-ditch attempt to hold their position. McKay discovered that the path was blocked by an ancient rockfall about 30 meters up, but saw the side door that was located just downhill of it, and knew what the aliens had been trying to defend. Here was the back door, the way she could enter the butte's interior and push upward from there. Plasma fire stuttered out of the entryway, struck the cliff above her head, and blew rocky divots out of the smooth surface. McKay motioned for her troops to retreat back around the pillar's broad curvature and waved a hand in the air.
"Hey, Top! I need a launcher!"
The company sergeant was 6 troopers back, so that a single well-placed grenade couldn't kill both leaders at once. He signaled assent, bawled an order, and passed one of the M-19s forward. McKay accepted the weapon from the private behind her, checked to ensure that it packed a full load of rockets, and inched around the curve. Plasma fire sizzled out of the door, but the officer forced herself to remain perfectly still. She triggered the weapon's 2X scope, sighted carefully, and squeezed the trigger. The tube jumped as the 102-millimeter rocket raced away, sailed through the hole, and detonated with a loud roar. There must have been some ammo stored inside, because there was a blue-white secondary explosion which shook the rock beneath the ODST officer's boots. A gout of fire flared from the side of the cliff. It was difficult to imagine anyone or anything having survived such a blast, so McKay passed the launcher to the rear and waved her troops forward. There was a cheer as the Marines ran up the path, shouldered their way through the smoke, and entered the butte's ancient interior. There were bodies, or what had been bodies. Fortunately, the tunnel was intact. A couple of troopers collected plasma weapons, tried them out on the nearest wall, and added them to their personal armament. Others, McKay included, stared up through a 30-meter-wide well toward the circle of daylight above. She saw a shadow pass overhead as one of the Pelicans dropped even more helljumpers onto the mesa. The distant thump of a frag grenade detonation made dust and loose soil tumble down on them.
"Hey, Loot," Private Sotha said, "what's the deal with this?"
Sotha stomped on the floor, and it rang in response. That was when McKay realized that she and her troops were standing on a large metal grating.
"What's it for?"
the private wondered aloud.
"To keep us out?"
McKay shook her head. "No, it looks old. Too old to have been put in place by the Covenant."
"I found a lift,"
one of the Marines yelled.
"That's what it looks like, anyway. Come check it out."
McKay went to investigate. Was this a way to reach the mesa? Her boot dislodged a shell casing, which fell through one of the grating's rectangular holes and dropped into the darkness below. It was a long time before it could be heard clanging off ancient stone. Silva, Wellesley, and the rest of the Major's headquarters organization were on top of the butte waiting for her by the time McKay rode the anti-grav lift to the surface and stepped out into the harsh sunlight. She blinked as she looked around. Bodies lay everywhere. Some wore marine green, but the vast majority were dressed in the rainbow colors that the Covenant used to identify its ranks and specialties. A squad of helljumpers moved through the carnage, searching for wounded humans and kicking corpses to make sure that the enemy soldiers were actually dead. One of them attempted to rise and received a burst from an assault weapon for his trouble.
"Welcome to Alpha Base," Major Silva said as he arrived at McKay's side. "You and your company did a damn good job, Lieutenant. Wellesley will have the rest of the battalion up here within the hour. It looks like I owe you that beer."
"Yes, sir," McKay replied happily. "You sure as hell do."
The tunnel was huge, plenty large enough to handle a Scorpion tank, which meant that the Master Chief had little difficulty steering the Warthog through the initial opening. He'd almost missed the entry at the bottom of a large dry wash. Cortana's sensors had identified the entrance to the tunnel system.
"It's not a natural formation," she'd warned him.
That meant someone built it. Logically, it meant that the tunnel led somewhere, and it might shave precious time off his search for the crashed lifeboats. Once inside, things became a little more difficult as the Spartan was forced to maneuver the LRV up ramps through a series of tight turns and right to the very edge of a pit. A quick recon confirmed that the gap was narrow enough to jump, assuming the Hog had a running start. The Master Chief backed away, warned the gunner to hang on, and put his foot to the floor. The LRV raced up the ramp, sailed through the air, and jounced to a hard landing on the other side.
"I'm picking up lots of Covenant traffic," Cortana said. "It sounds like Major Silva and the Helljumpers have captured an enemy position. If we can round up the rest of the survivors and find Captain Keyes, we'll have a chance to coordinate some serious resistance."
"Good," the Master Chief answered. "It's about time something broke our way."
The Warthog's headlights swung across ancient walls as the Spartan turned the wheel, and the LRV emerged into a large open area, dotted with mysterious installations. It was dark. The road ended in front of a deep chasm. It wasn't long before Covenant troops emerged like maggots spilling out of a rotting corpse. Plasma fire splashed across the Warthog's windscreen. The Spartan dove from the vehicle, crouched near the driver's side front tire, and drew his pistol. Fitzgerald opened up with the LAAG and swept the area with fire. Spent shell casings rained all around them. The chief peered over the edge of the Warthog. They were dangerously exposed. The roadway they'd been using was devoid of cover, elevated roughly 3 meters above the rest of the massive vaulted chamber. Worse, it bisected the chamber, which left them exposed on virtually all sides. The giant enclosure was dimly lit. Visibility was poor, and the muzzle flash from the Warthog's gun played hell with his night vision. He blinked his eyes to clear them, then activated his pistol's scope. The metal floor dropped away to either side, and every surface was engraved with the strange geometric patterns that festooned Halo's mysterious architecture. Set well back from their position were a number of small structures, pillars, and support pylons. The Covenant were dug in among them. A grunt popped out from cover, his plasma pistol glowing green. He'd overcharged the weapon. The little SOBs liked to dump energy into the weapon and discharge it all at once. It drained the weapon damn quick, but it also inflicted hellish damage on a target. A pulsing green-white orb of plasma sizzled past the Warthog. The Master Chief returned fire, then dropped back behind the hog.
"Fitzgerald," he barked, "keep fire on them. I'll move up on the left and take them out."
"Got it!"
The tri-barreled gun thundered, and fire hosed the Covenant position. The Spartan was prepared to charge ahead and into the fight when his motion sensor painted movement from the rear. The LAAG ceased fire as Fitzgerald yelled in pain and fell from the back of the Warthog. The Marine's helmet cracked into the metal floor. A shard of glassy, translucent material, tapered to a wicked point, protruded from the Marine's bicep. The shard glowed a ghostly purple.
"God damn it!"
Fitzgerald grunted as he tried to regain his footing. 2 seconds later, the purple shard exploded and blood sprayed from the wound. Fitzgerald howled in agony. There was no time to tend to Fitzgerald's injuries. A pair of grunts charged up the slight incline and opened fire. A barrage of the glassy projectiles arced toward them and ricocheted madly from the Warthog. They were too close. The chief fired at the nearest grunt, 3 shots in succession. A trio of bullet pocks formed a neat cluster in the alien's chest. The grunt's partner squealed in anger and brought his gun to bear. An odd hunchback device with a ridge of the glassy projectiles protruded from it like dorsal fins. The weapon spat purple-white needles at him. He sidestepped and slammed the butt of the pistol into the grunt's head. The alien's skull caved in. He kicked the corpse back down the incline. Fitzgerald had crawled to cover behind the Warthog. He was pale, but didn't look shocky yet. The Spartan grabbed a first aid kit and expertly treated the wound. Self-sealing biofoam filled the wound, packed it off, and numbed it. The young Marine would need some stitches and some time to rebuild the torn, savaged muscle of his arm, but he'd live, if either of them made it out of here alive.
"You okay?" he asked the wounded soldier.
Fitzgerald nodded, wiped sweat from his forehead with a bloody hand, then struggled back to his feet. Without another word, he manned the LAAG. It took the better part of 15 minutes for the Master Chief and the gunner to sweep the area clear of Covenant forces. The Spartan patrolled the perimeter. To the left of the Warthog, the chamber stretched roughly 80 meters, then ended, as did the road ahead, in a massive chasm.
"Any ideas?" he asked Cortana.
There was a brief pause as the AI examined the data. "The roadway ahead ends in a gap, but it's logical to assume that there's some kind of bridge mechanism. Find the controls and extend the bridge, and we should be able to get across."
He nodded.
He turned back and crossed the roadway and headed off to the right of the parked Warthog. As he passed the vehicle, he called over his shoulder to Fitzgerald.
"Wait here. I'm going to find us a way across."
The Master Chief marched across the chamber and checked the odd structures that dotted the landscape. Some were illuminated by the dim glow from some kind of light panels, but there was no indication what powered them, or what the structures contained. He frowned. There didn't seem to be any sign of mechanisms or controls. He was about to head back to the Warthog and backtrack their course, then stopped. He stared at one of the massive pillars that stretched to the ceiling far overhead. There was nothing down here. But perhaps the mechanism he sought was above them. He moved as far to the end of the area as he could. Unlike the opposite side of the chamber, this half was bordered by a high, grooved metal wall. He followed the edge of the barrier and was gratified to locate a gap in the wall, a doorway. Inside, a ramp led up 20 meters, then turned 90 degrees to the left. The Spartan drew his pistol, activated his helmet lamp, and crept up the ramp. His caution was justified. As he reached the top, his motion sensor showed a contact right on top of him. He ducked around the corner just in time to meet the charge of a crimson-armored elite. The elite growled a challenge and swung a vicious blow at the chief's head. He ducked, and his shields took the brunt of the blow. He fired at point-blank range, not even bothering to aim. The elite reared and returned fire, and plasma blasts slashed through the narrow corridor. In one fluid motion, the chief drew, primed, and dropped a frag grenade, practically at the elite's feet. The alien warbled in surprise as the Spartan spun and ducked back around the corner. he was rewarded by a flash of smoke and fire. A spray of purple-black blood splashed the metal wall. He rounded the corner, pistol at the ready, and stepped over the elite's smoking corpse. The chief continued along the corridor, which opened onto a narrow ledge. Directly to his right, the thick metal walls stretched up and out of sight. To his left, the metal sloped away at a steep angle that led back to the main floor, that gradually gave way to the yawning abyss as he continued forward. Ahead of him, there was a pulsing glow, like the strobe of a pelican's running lights. He stopped at the source of the light. A pair of small, glowing orbs hung suspended above a roughly rectangular frame of blue matte metal. Floating within the frame were a series of pulsing, shifting displays, semi-transparent, like Cortana's holographic appearance, though there was no visible projection device. The display's shimmering geometric patterns nagged at him, as if he should recognize them somehow. Even with his enhanced memory, he couldn't place where he'd seen them before. They just seemed familiar. He reached a finger out to one of the symbols, a blue-green circle. The Spartan expected his finger to pass through nothing more than air. He was surprised when his finger met resistance, and the panel lights began to pulse more quickly.
"What did you do?" Cortana asked, her voice alarmed. "I'm detecting an energy spike."
"I don't know," the Spartan admitted. He wasn't sure why he touched the button on the display. He just knew it felt right. There was a high-pitched whine, and from his vantage point, he could see the gap in the roadway in the distance. At its edges, harsh white lights sprang into view, forming a path across the break in the road, like a flashlight beam in smoke. The light brightened, and there was a tremendous ripping sound.
"I'm showing a lot of photonic activity," Cortana said. "The excited photons have displaced the air around the light path."
"Which means?"
"Which means," she continued, "that the light has become coherent, solid."
She paused, then added,
"How did you know what control to push?"
"I didn't. Let's get the hell out of here." The ride across the light bridge was harrowing. He had tested the phenomenon with his foot and discovered that it was as solid and unyielding as rock. Then he'd shrugged, told Fitzgerald to hang on, and sped the Warthog directly at the beam of illumination. He could hear Fitzgerald alternate between cursing and praying as they drove over the seemingly bottomless chasm on nothing more than a beam of light. Once on the other side, they followed the tunnel out into the valley beyond, where the Master Chief guided the hog up through a scattering of rocks and trees to the top of a grassy rise. A sheer cliff threatened to block progress to the right, forcing them to stay to the left as they headed toward a gap to the south. The vehicle splashed through a shallow river. They saw the mouth of a passageway off to the right, decided that it would be best to investigate, and guided the all-terrain vehicle up through a rocky pass. It was only a matter of minutes before the Warthog arrived on a ledge that looked out over a valley below. The Master Chief could see a UNSC lifeboat and a scattering of Covenant troops, but no Marines. Not a good sign. A vaguely pyramidal shape rose to dominate the very center of the valley. The Master Chief saw a pulse of light race toward the sky and knew that the structure had to be similar to whatever caused the flash he'd seen earlier. There was only a moment to take in the situation before the aliens opened fire and the gunner replied in kind. It was time to put the hog into motion. The Master Chief drove as the M41 LAAG whirred and rattled behind him. Marine Fitzgerald shouted, "You like that? Here, have some more!" and fired another sustained burst. A pair of grunts rolled in opposite directions as a squat, long-armed jackal was cut in half, and the heavy-caliber slugs blew divots out of the ground beyond. As the LRV swung past the pyramid, Cortana said, "There are some Marines hiding up on the hill. Let's give them a hand." The Spartan aimed for a gap between two trees and saw a tall, angular elite step out from cover. The elite raised a weapon, but was quickly transformed into a speed bump as the Warthog knocked him down and the huge tires crushed his body. The Marines appeared soon after that, holding their assault weapons in the air and called greetings. A sergeant nodded.
"It's good to see you, Chief. We're starting to get a little bit warm around here."
Covenant forces made a run at the hill after that, but the 12.7 by 99 millimeter rounds made short work of them, and the slope was soon littered with their bodies. The Master Chief heard a burst of static, followed by Fohammer's voice.
"Echo 419 to Cortana. Come in."
"We read you, 419. We have survivors and need immediate dust-off."
"Roger, Cortana. On my way. I spot additional lifeboats in your area."
"Acknowledged," Cortana answered. "We're on our way."
It took the better part of the afternoon to check the interlocking valleys, locate the rest of the survivors, and deal with the Covenant forces who attempted to interfere. But finally, having rounded up a total of 63 Marines and Naval personnel, the Spartan watched Echo 419 land for the last time and jumped aboard. Fohammer looked back over her shoulder.
"You put in a long day, Chief. Nice job. Our ETA at Alpha Base is 30 minutes.
"Acknowledged," the Spartan said.
He exhaled, then softened his clipped tone. He allowed himself to lean back against the bulkhead and added, "Thanks for the ride." 30 seconds later, he was asleep. Captain Jacob Keyes stood hands on knees, panting in front of a vertical cliff face. He and the rest of the command party had been running off and on for 3 hours. Even the Marines were exhausted, as the shadow cast by the Covenant dropship drifted over them and blocked the sun. Keyes considered making use of Dowski's pistol to fire at the aircraft, but couldn't summon the energy. The voice that boomed through the externally mounted speakers was all too familiar.
"Captain Keyes, this is Ellen Dowski. This is a box canyon. There's no place for you to run. You might as well pack it in."
The darkness cast by the ship shifted as the aircraft lowered itself onto the bottom of the canyon. The engines howled and blew dust in all directions before eventually spooling down. A hatch opened, and Dowski jumped to the ground. She appeared to be unharmed and wore what could only be described as a self-satisfied smirk.
"You see, it's just like I told you it would be."
A half-dozen veteran elites dropped to the ground, followed by a brace of grunts. All were heavily armed. Gravel crunched as they approached the cliff face. One of the aliens spoke, its booming voice warbling the human speech with detectable discomfort.
"You will drop your weapons now."
The command crew looked at Keyes. He shrugged, bent over, and laid the M6D on the ground. The others did likewise. The grunts scurried about and collected the weapons. One of them chortled in his own language as he collected all three of the Marines' assault weapons and carried them away.
"Which?"
the elite with the translator demanded, and looked at Dowski.
"That one,"
the renegade officer proclaimed, and pointed at Keyes. Hikawa started forward.
"You little bitch! I'll..."
No one ever learned what Hikawa would do, because the elite shot her dead. Keyes lunged forward and attempted to tackle the elite, to no avail. A lightning-fast blow clipped the side of his head, hard enough that his vision grayed out. He fell to the dirt. The elite was methodical. Starting with the Marines, he shot each captured human in the head. Wang attempted to run, but a plasma bolt hit him between the shoulder blades. Lovell made a grab for the pistol and took a blast to the face. Keyes struggled to his feet again, dizzy and disoriented, and attempted to rush the elite. He was clubbed to the ground a second time. Hikawa's dead eyes stared vacantly back at him. Finally, after the last plasma bolt had been fired, and while the odor of burned flesh still hung in the air, only two members of the command crew were still alive, Keyes and Dowski. The ensign was pale. She shook her head and wrung her hands.
"I didn't know, sir. Honest, I didn't. They told me..."
The elite snapped up a fallen MCD pistol and shot Dowski. The bullet hit her in the center of her forehead. The pistol's report echoed down the canyon. The ensign's eyes rolled back in her head. Her knees gave way, and she collapsed in a heap. The elite turned the M60 over in his hand. The weapon was small compared to his pistol, and his finger didn't fit easily inside the trigger guard.
"Projectiles. Very primitive. Take him away."
Keyes felt the other elites grab him by the arms and drag him up a ramp into the dropship's murky interior. It seemed that the Covenant's rules had changed again. Now they did take prisoners. Just not very many. The ship lifted, and the only human to survive sincerely wished that he hadn't. Alpha Base didn't offer a whole lot of amenities, but the Spartan took full advantage of what few there were. First came a full 10 hours of completely uninterrupted sleep, followed by components selected from 2 MREs, or meals ready to eat, and a 2-minute hot shower. The water was provided by the ring itself. The heat was courtesy of a Covenant power plant, and the shower head had been fabricated by one of the techs from the Pillar of Autumn. Though brief, the shower felt good, very good, and the Spartan enjoyed every second of it. The Master Chief had dried off, scrounged a fresh set of utilities, and was just about to run a routine maintenance check on his armor when a private stuck his head into the Spartan's quarters, a prefab memory plastic cubicle that had replaced the archaic concept of tents.
"Sorry to bother you, Chief, but Major Silva would like to see you in the command post on the double."
The Spartan wiped his hands with a rag.
"I'll be right there."
The Master Chief was just about to take the armor off standby when the Marine reappeared.
"One more thing. The Major said to leave your armor here."
The Spartan frowned. He didn't like to be separated from his armor, especially in a combat zone. But an order was an order, and until he determined what had happened to Keyes, Silva was in command. He nodded.
"Thank you, Private."
He checked to ensure that his gear was squared away, activated the armor's security system, and buckled an M60 around his waist. The Major's office was located in Alpha Base's CP, the centermost of the alien structures at the top of the butte. He made his way through the halls and down a blood-stained corridor. A pair of manacled grunt POWs were hard at work scrubbing the floor under the watchful gaze of a Navy guard. 2 helljumpers stood guard outside of Silva's door. Both looked extremely sharp for troopers who had been in combat the day before. They favored the Spartan with the casually hostile look that members of the ODST reserved for anyone or anything that wasn't part of their elite organization. The larger of the pair eyed the non-com's collar insignia.
"Yeah, Chief. What can we do for you?"
"Master Chief Spartan 117 reporting to Major Silva."
Spartan 117 was the only official designation he had in the eyes of the military. It occurred to him that after Reach fell, there was no one left who knew his name was John.
"Spartan 117? The smaller of the 2 Marines inquired. "What the hell kind of a name is that?"
"Look who's talking,"
McKay interrupted as she approached the Master Chief from behind.
"That's a pretty strange question coming from a guy named Utrajneka."
Both of the helljumpers laughed, and McKay waved the Spartan through the door.
"Never mind those 2, Chief. They're jump-happy. My name is McKay. Go on in."
The Spartan said,
"Thank you, ma'am,"
took 3 steps forward, and found himself standing in front of a makeshift desk. Major Silva looked up from what he was doing and met the Master Chief's eyes. The Chief snapped to attention.
"Sir, Master Chief Spartan 117 reporting as ordered, sir."
The chair had been salvaged from a UNSC lifeboat. It made a gentle hissing noise as Silva leaned backward. He held a stylus, which he used to tap his lips. That was the moment when most officers would have said, "At ease," and the fact that he didn't was a clear indication that something was wrong. But what? McKay circled around to Silva's left, where she leaned on the wall and watched the scene through hooded eyes. She wore her hair helljumper style, short on the sides so the tattoos on her scalp could be seen, and flat on top. She had green eyes,
a slightly flattened nose, and full lips. It managed to be both a soldier's face and a woman's face at the same time. When Silva spoke, it was as if he could read the Spartan's mind.
"So you're wondering who I am and what this is all about. That's understandable, especially given your elite status, your close relationship with Captain Keyes, and the fact that we now know he has been captured. Loyalty is a fine thing, one of the many virtues for which the military is known and a quality I admire."
Silva stood and started to pace back and forth behind his chair. "However, there's a chain of command, which means that you report to me, not to Keyes, not to Cartana, and not to yourself." The Marine stopped, turned, and looked the Master Chief square in the eye.
"I thought it would be a good idea for you and I to pull a comm check. So here's the deal. I'm short a captain, so Lieutenant McKay is serving as my executive officer. If either one of us says crap, then I expect you to ask what color, how much, and where do you want it. Do you read me?"
The chief stared for a moment and clenched his jaw.
"Perfectly, sir."
"Good. Now one more thing. I'm familiar with your record, and I admire it. You are one hell of a soldier. That said, you are also a freak, the last remaining subject in a terribly flawed experiment, and one which should never be repeated."
McKay watched the Master Chief's face. His hair was worn short. Not as short as hers, but short. He had serious eyes, a firm mouth, and a strong jaw. His skin hadn't been exposed to the sun for a long time, and it was white, too white, like something that lived in the deep recesses of a cave. From what she had heard, he had been a professional soldier since the age of 6. Which meant he was an expert at controlling what showed on his face. But she could see the words hit like bullets striking a target. Nothing overt, just a slight narrowing of the eyes and a tightness around his mouth. She looked at Silva, but if the Major was aware of the changes, he didn't seem to care.
"The whole notion of selecting people at birth, screwing with their minds, and modifying their bodies is wrong. First, because the candidates have no choice. Second, because the subjects of the program are transformed into human aliens. And third, because the Spartan program failed. Are you familiar with a man named Charles Darwin?"
"No, probably not, because he never went to war."
"Darwin was a naturalist who proposed a theory called natural selection. Simply put, he believed that those species best equipped to survive would do so, while others, less effective organisms, would eventually die out. That's what happened to the Spartans, Chief. They died out, or will, once you're gone. And that's where the ODST comes in. It was the Helljumpers who took this butte, son, not a bunch of augmented freaks dressed in fancy armor. When we push the Covenant back, which I sincerely believe we will, that victory will be the result of work by men and women like Lieutenant McKay. Human beings who are razor-sharp, metal-tough, and green to the core. Do you read me?"
The Master Chief remembered Linda, James, and all the rest of the 73 boys and girls with whom he had learned to fight. All dead. All labeled as freaks. All dismissed as having been part of a failed experiment. He took a deep breath.
"Sir. No, sir."
There was a long moment of silence as the two men stared into each other's eyes. Finally, after a good 5 seconds had elapsed, the Major nodded.
"I understand. ODSTs are loyal to our dead as well. But that doesn't change the facts. The Spartan program is over. Human beings will win this war. So you might as well get used to it. In the meantime, we need every warrior we have. Especially those who have more medals than the entire general staff put together."
Then, as if some sort of switch had been thrown, the ODST officer's entire demeanor changed. He said, "At ease," invited both of his guests to sit down, and proceeded to brief the Master Chief on his upcoming mission.
The Covenant had Captain Keyes. Recon had confirmed it, and Silva was determined to get him back. Though their ship had been damaged by the Pillar of Autumn during her brief rampage through the system, The Covenant's engineers were hard at work making repairs to the Truth and Reconciliation. Now, hovering only a few hundred units off Halo's surface, the ship had become a sort of de facto headquarters for those assigned to harvest the Ringworld's technology. The warship was at the very center of the command structure's activities. The corridors were thick with officer elites, major jackals, and veteran grunts. There was also a scattering of engineers, amorphous-looking creatures held aloft by gas bladders, who had a savant-like ability to dismantle, repair, and reassemble any complex technology. But all of them, regardless of how senior they might be, hurried to get out of the way as Zuka Zamami marched through the halls, closely followed by a reluctant Yayup. Not because of his rank, but because of his appearance and the message it sent. The arrogant tilt of his head, the space-black armor, and the steady click-clack of his heels all seemed to radiate confidence and authority. Still, formidable as Zamami was, no one was allowed onto the command deck without being screened, and no less than 6 black-clad elites were waiting when he and his aides stepped off the gravity lift. If these elites were intimidated by their fellows' demeanor, they gave no sign of it.
"Identification," one of them said brusquely, and extended his hand.
Zamami dropped his disc into the other warrior's hand with the air of someone who is conferring a favor on a lesser being. The security officer accepted Zamami's identity disc and dropped it into a handheld reader. Data appeared and scrolled from right to left.
"Place your hand in the slot."
The second machine took the form of a rectangular black box which stood about 5 units high. Green lights sprayed out of a slot located in the structure's side.
Zamami did as instructed, felt a sudden stab of pain as the machine sampled his tissue, and knew that a computer was busy comparing his DNA with that on file. Not because he might be human, but because politics were rife within the Covenant, and there had been a few assassinations of late.
"Confirmed," the elite said. "It appears as though you are the same Zuka Zamami that's scheduled to meet with a Council of Masters 15 units from now. The Council is running behind schedule, however, so you'll have to wait."
"Please hand all personal weapons to me. There's a waiting room over there, but the grunt will have to remain outside. You will be called when the Council is ready." Though not burdened by his energy rifle, which he had given to Yayup to carry, the elite did have a plasma pistol, which he surrendered butt first.
Zamami made his way into the makeshift holding area and discovered that a number of other beings had been forced to wait as well. Most sat hunched over, kept to themselves, and stared at the deck.
Making matters even worse was the fact that, rather than first come, first served, it seemed as though rank definitely had its privileges, and the most senior penitents were seen first.
Not that the elite could complain. Had it not been for his rank, the Council would never have agreed to see him at all. But finally, after what seemed like an eternity, Zamami was ushered into the chamber where the Command Council had convened.
A minor prophet sat, legs folded, at the center of a table which curved around a podium at which the elite was clearly expected to stand. Whenever a gust of air hit the exalted one, he seemed to bob slightly, suggesting that rather than sit on a chair, he preferred to let his anti-grav belt support him, either as a matter of habit or as a stratagem designed to remind others of who and what he was.
Something Zamami not only understood, but admired.
The prophet wore a complex headpiece. It was set with gemstones and wired for communications. A silver mantle rested on his shoulders and supported a fancifully woven cluster of gold wires, which extended forward to place a microphone in front of his bony lips. Richly embroidered red robes cascaded down over his lap and fell to the deck. Obsidian black eyes tracked the elite all the way to the podium, while an assistant whispered in his ear.
The other elite, an aristocrat named Soha Rolami, raised a hand palm outward.
"I greet you, Zamami. How is your wound? Healing nicely, I hope."
Rolami outranked Zamami by 2 full levels. The junior officer gloried in the respectful manner with which the other elite had greeted him.
Thank you, Excellency. I will heal.
Enough,
the prophet said officiously.
We're running late, so let's get on with it. Zuka Zamami comes before the council seeking special dispensation to take leave of the unit he commands in order to locate and kill one particular human.
A rather strange notion, since all of them look alike and are equally annoying. However, according to our records, this particular human is responsible for hundreds of Covenant casualties.
The council notes that Officer Zamami was wounded during an encounter with this human, and reminds Officer Zamami that the Covenant has no tolerance for personal vendettas. Please keep that in mind as you make your case, and be mindful of the time. A measure of brevity will serve you well.
Zamami lowered his eyes as a signal of respect.
Thank you, Excellency. Our spies suspect that the individual in question was raised to be a warrior from a very young age, surgically altered to enhance his abilities, and furnished with armor which may be superior to our own.
Better than our own?
The prophet inquired, his tone making it clear that he considered such a possibility extremely unlikely.
Mind your words, Officer Zamami.
The technology underlying the armor you wear came straight from the Forerunners. To say that it is in any way inferior verges on sacrilege.
Still, what Zamami says is true,
Rolami put in.
The files are full of reports which, though contradictory in some cases, all make mention of one or more humans clad in reactive special armor.
Assuming that the eyewitness accounts are accurate, it appears that this individual or group of individuals can absorb a great deal of punishment without suffering personal injury, have exceptional combat skills, and demonstrate superior leadership capabilities. Wherever he or they appear, other humans rally and fight with renewed vigor.
Exactly, Zamami said gratefully. Which is why I recommend that a special hunter-killer team be commissioned to find the human and retrieve his armor for analysis.
Noted, the prophet said gravely. Withdraw while the council confers.
Zamami had little choice but to lower his eyes, back away from the podium, and turn to the door. Once out in the hallway, the elite was required to wait for only a few units before his name again was called, and he was ushered back into the room. Zamami saw that both the prophet and the second elite had disappeared, leaving Rolami to deliver the news. The other officer stood, as if to reduce the width of the social gap that separated them.
I regret, Zamami, that the prophet places little weight on the reports, labeling them combat-induced hysteria. More than that, we all agree that you are far too valuable an asset to expend on a single target. Your request has been denied.
Zamami knew that Rolami had invented the far too valuable aspect of his report in order to cushion the blow, but appreciated the intent behind the words.
Though severely disappointed, he was a soldier, and that meant following orders. He lowered his eyes.
Yes, Excellency. Thank you, Excellency.
Yayap saw the elite emerge, read the slight droop of his shoulders, and knew his prayers had been answered. The council had denied the elite's insane request. He would be allowed to return to his unit, and life would return to normal.
If Zamami had been intimidating on his way to see the council, he was a good deal less so on his way out. He walked even faster, however, forcing Yayap to break into a run. The grunt weaved his way through the foot traffic arrayed in front of him and struggled to keep pace with Zamami. Yayap squealed in surprise when he slammed into the back of Zamami's armored legs. The elite had come to a sudden halt. The grunt noticed with unease that his new master's hands were clenched. He followed Zamami's gaze and spotted a group of four jackals.
They dragged a uniformed human between them. Keyes had just been interrogated for the third time. Some sort of neural shock treatment had been administered to make him talk, and his nerve endings continued to buzz as the aliens prodded his back, yelled incomprehensible gibberish into his ears, and laughed at his discomfort. He tasted his own blood. The procession came to a sudden stop as an elite in black combat armor blocked the way, pointed a long, slender finger at the human and said,
"You, tell me where I can find the human who wears the special armor."
Keyes looked up, struggled to focus his eyes and face the alien. He saw the dressing and guessed the rest.
"I don't have the foggiest idea," he said.
He managed a weak smile.
"But the next time you run into him, you might consider ducking."
Zamami took a full step forward and backhanded the human across the face. Keyes staggered, recovered his balance, and wiped a trace of blood away from the corner of his mouth. He locked eyes with the alien for the second time.
"Go ahead. Shoot me."
Yayap saw the elite consider doing just that, as his right hand went to the pistol, touched the butt, and fell away. Then, without another word, Zamami walked away. The grunt followed. Somehow, by means Yayap wasn't quite sure of, the human had won.
Chapter 4 D-117-1104 Spartan 117 Mission Clock, Pelican Echo 419, in flight. Recon flights conducted the day before had revealed that the sensors aboard Covenant vessel Truth and Reconciliation might have a blind spot downspin of the alien vessel's current position, where a small mountain rose to block the electronic view. Even more important, Wellesley had concocted an array of signals designed to trick the Covenant technicians into believing that any UNSC dropship was actually one of their own. 50 meters above the deck, and cloaked in electronic camouflage, the Master Chief and a pelican load of Helljumpers waited to find out if their ruse would work. Only time would tell if the fake signals were effective. One thing was for certain. Though conceived for the express purpose of rescuing Captain Keyes, the mission put together by Silva, Wellesley, and Cortana bore still another, even more important purpose. If the rescue team did manage to penetrate a Covenant vessel and successfully remove a prisoner, the human presence on Halo would be transformed from an attempt merely to survive into a full-fledged resistance movement.
The ship shuddered as it hit a series of air pockets, then swayed from side to side as the pilot who referred to herself as Foehammer wove back and forth through an obstacle course of low-lying hills.
The Master Chief took the opportunity to assess the Marines seated around him. They were Helljumpers, the same people Silva said would ultimately win the war, relegating freaks like himself to the dustbin of history. Maybe Silva was right. Maybe the Spartan program would end with him. But that didn't matter. Not here. Not now. The Marines would help him take out the sentries, cope with weapons emplacements, and reach the gravity lift located directly below the Truth and Reconciliation's belly, and he was glad to have their help. Even with the element of surprise, plus support from the ODST troops, things were likely to be pretty hot by the time they made it to the lift. That's when a second dropship would land and discharge a group of regular Marines that would join the assault on the ship itself. There was some concern that the Truth and Reconciliation might simply lift at that point, but Cortana had been monitoring Covenant communications and was convinced that critical repairs were still being made to the alien cruiser. Assuming that they were able to reach the gravity lift, meet up with their reinforcements, and fight their way aboard the ship, all they had to do was find Keyes, eliminate an unknown number of hostiles, and show up for the dust-off. A walk in the park. Foehammer's voice came over the intercom.
"We are five to dirt. Repeat, five to dirt."
That was Sergeant Parker's cue to stand and eye his troops. His voice came over the team freak and grated on the Spartan's ears.
"All right, boys and girls, lock and load." The Covenant is throwing a party, and you are invited. Remember, the Master Chief goes in first, so take your cues from him. I don't know about you, but I like having a swabby on point.
There was general laughter. Parker gave the Spartan a thumbs up, and he offered the same gesture in return. It felt good to have some backup for a change. He mentally reviewed the plan, which called for him to insert ahead of the Helljumpers and clear a path with his S-2 AM sniper's rifle. Once the outer defenses were cleared, the Marines would move up. Then, once the element of surprise had been lost, the Master Chief planned to switch to his MA-5B assault rifle for the close-in work. Like the rest of the troops, the Spartan was carrying a full combat load of ammo, grenades, and other gear, plus two magazines for the M-19 launchers.
30 seconds to dirt, Fauxhammer announced. Shoot some of the bastards for me!
As the Pelican hovered a foot above the surface, Parker yelled,
Go! Go! Go!
And the Master Chief sprang down the ramp. He sidestepped and swept the area. The Helljumpers thundered down the ramp and onto the ground right behind him. It was dark, which meant they had nothing beyond the light reflected off the moon that hung in the sky and the glow of Covenant worklights to guide them to their objective. Seconds later, Echo 419 was airborne again. The pilot turned downspin, fed fuel to her engines, and disappeared into the night. The Master Chief heard the aircraft pass over his head, gathered his bearings, and spotted a footpath off to the right. The ODST troops spread out to either side as Parker and a 3-Marine fire team turned to cover the Group 6. He crept along the rocky footpath, which rose to a 2-meter-high embankment. As he neared a cluster of rocks, Cortana warned the Spartan of enemy activity ahead. A host of red dots appeared on his motion sensor. Several meters ahead and to the left was a deep pit, some kind of excavation, judging from the Covenant work lights that dotted the area with pools of illumination. He briefly wondered what the aliens were looking for. He clicked the rifle's safety off. What they were looking for didn't matter. In the end, he'd make sure they never lived to find it. The Master Chief found a patch of cover next to a tree, raised the rifle, and used the scope's 2X and night optic setting to find the Covenant gun emplacements located on the far side of the depression. There were lots of grunts, jackals, and elites in the area, but it was imperative to neutralize the plasma cannons, known as shades, before the Marines moved out into the open. His Mjolnir armor and shields could handle a limited amount of the shades' plasma fire. The Helljumper's ballistic armor, on the other hand, just couldn't handle that kind of firepower. Once both shades had been located, the Spartans switched to the 10X setting, practiced the move from one target to the next, and tried it yet again. Once he was sure that he could switch targets quickly enough, he exhaled quietly, then held his breath. His hand squeezed the trigger, and the rifle kicked against his shoulder. The first shot took the nearest gunner in the chest. As the grunt tumbled from the shade seat, the Master Chief panned the rifle to the right and put a 14.5mm round through the second grunt's pointy head. The rifle's booming report alerted the Covenant, and they returned fire. He moved forward along the low ridge and took a new firing position behind the scaly bark of a tree. The rifle barked twice more, and a pair of jackals fell. He reloaded with practiced ease and continued sniping. Without the shades to support them, the enemy fell in ones, twos, and threes. The Master Chief reloaded again, fired until there were no more targets of opportunity, and made the switch to his assault rifle. He jumped down into the open pit and crouched behind a large boulder, one of several that were strewn around the depression. "Helljumpers, move up!" he barked into the radio. In seconds, the ODSTs charged into the pit. As the lead soldiers entered, a trio of grunts burst from hiding, shot one of the Marines in the face, and tried to run. The Helljumper's body hadn't even hit the ground before the Spartan and another ODST hosed the aliens with bullets. The gunshots echoed through the twisting canyons, then faded. The Spartan frowned. There was no way the fracas would go unnoticed. The element of surprise was gone. There was no time to waste. The Master Chief led the Helljumpers through the depression, up a hill on the far side of the pit, and along the side of a sheer cliff face. He stayed close to this rock wall on his right, mindful of the sheer drop that awaited any who strayed too far to the left.
he could just make out the glint of moonlight on a massive ocean far below him. His motion sensor pinged two contacts, and he waved the ODSTs to a halt. He crouched behind a clump of brush at the top of the cliff path, conscious of the massive drop on the other side. A pair of jackals rounded the bend ahead, their overcharged plasma pistols pulsing green, and paid dearly for their enthusiasm. The Spartan sprang from his cover and slammed the butt of his rifle into the nearest jackal shield. The energy field flared and died, and the force of the blow sent the alien tumbling off the path. The alien screamed and plummeted off the cliff. The chief pivoted and fired his rifle from the hip. The burst struck the second alien in the side. The jackal slammed to the ground as his finger tightened on the weapon's trigger as he died. A massive hole blossomed in the rock above the Master Chief's head. He slammed a fresh magazine into his weapon and continued to advance.
"Here's a little something to remember me by,"
one of the Marines growled, and shot each jackal in the head. As the team continued up the path, they encountered another shade, more grunts, and a pair of jackals, all of whom seemed to melt away under the combined assault by the Master Chief's sniper rifle, the Marines' assault weapons, and a few well-placed grenades. The rescue force pressed on, toward the lights beyond. Covenant resistance was determined but spotty, and before long the Master Chief could hear the thrumming sound of the alien ship as it hovered more than 100 meters above them. His skin crackled with static electricity. In the center of a steep dip in the rock lay a large metal disc, the gravity lift that the Covenant used to move troops, supplies, and vehicles to and from the Ringworld surface. Purple light shimmered around the platform where the beam was anchored.
"Come on!" the Master Chief shouted, pointing at the lift. "That's our way in! Let's move!"
There was a mad dash through a narrow canyon, followed by a pitched battle as the Master Chief and the Helljumpers entered the area directly below the ship. The depression was ringed with shades, and all of them opened fire at once. The chief made use of the sniper rifle to kill the nearest gunner, charged up the intervening slope, and jumped into the now vacant seat. The first order of business was to silence the other guns. He yanked the control yoke to the left, and the gun swiveled to face a second shade across the defile. A glowing image of a hollow triangle floated in front of his face. When it lined up with the other gun, it flashed red. He thumbed the firing studs, and lances of purple-white energy lashed the enemy emplacement. The grunt gunner struggled to leap free of his shade, fell into the path of the Spartan's fire, and was speared by a powerful blast. He slumped against the base of his abandoned shade. A smoking hole burned through his chest. The Master Chief swiveled the captured gun and took aim on the remaining shades. He hosed the targets with a hellish wave of destructive energy, then, satisfied that the emplacements were silenced, went to work on the enemy ground troops. He had just burned a pair of jackals to the ground when Cortana announced that a Covenant dropship was inbound, and the Master Chief was forced to shift his fire to the alien aircraft and the troops that spilled out onto the ground. The human walked the blue shade fire across the aliens, cutting them down and pounding what remained into mush. He was still at it when a Marine yelled,
"Look at that! There's more of them!"
And a dozen figures floated down through the gravity lift. A pair of the newcomers were huge and wore steel blue armor, as well as handheld plate armor shields. The chief had faced such creatures before, not long before Reach fell. Covenant hunters were tough, dangerous foes, practically walking tanks. They were slow and appeared clumsy, but the cannons mounted on their arms were equivalent to the heavy weapons a banshee carried, and they could leap into motion with startling suddenness. Their metal shields could withstand a tremendous amount of punishment. Worse, they would never stop until the enemy lay dead at their feet, or they were dead themselves. The Helljumpers opened fire, grenades exploded, and the pair of hunters roared defiance. One of them lifted his right arm and fired his weapon, a fuel rod gun. One of the ODSTs screamed and fell, his flesh melting. The Marine's rocket fired into the air, slid into the grav lift beam, and detonated harmlessly. The hunters lumbered from the grav lift and strode up the edge of the pit. Behind them, a swarm of jackals and elites formed a rough phalanx and peppered the human positions with plasma fire. Sergeant Parker yelled, "Hit 'em, hell jumpers!" And the ODSTs poured fire onto the massive alien juggernauts. Bullets pinged from their armor and whined through the rocks. The Spartans swiveled around and heard a warning tone as a hunter's weapon discharged. Burning energy smashed into him. The Shade shook under the force of the incoming fire as the Master Chief clenched his jaw and forced himself to bring the targeting reticle down onto the target. His shield bled energy and began to shriek a shrill alarm. The instant the targeting display pulsed red, he mashed down the firing studs and unleashed a flood of incandescent blue light. The hunter didn't have time to bring its shield fully into play, and plasma blasts burned through multiple layers of armor and exited through his spine.
The Spartan heard a cry of what sounded like anguish as the second alien saw his bond brother fall. The hunter spun and fired his fuel rod gun at the Master Chief's captured emplacement. The Shade took a direct hit, flipped over onto its side, and threw him to the ground.
The ground vibrated as the enraged alien charged up the slope, right for the downed Spartan. The Chief rolled to his right and came up in a low crouch. The alien was close now, within 5 meters. A row of razor-sharp spines sprang up along the hunter's back. With his shields depleted, the Chief knew that those spines could cut him in two. He dropped to one knee and unslung his assault rifle. Bullets bounced harmlessly from the alien's armor. At the last second, he dodged left and slid down the slope. The hunter didn't anticipate the move, and the razor spines passed over the Spartan's head, missing him by mere inches. The Chief rolled onto his belly and saw his opportunity. A patch of orange, leathery skin was visible along the hunter's curved spine. He emptied the MA-5B's magazine into the unprotected target, and thick orange blood gouted from a cluster of bullet wounds. The hunter gave a low, keening wail, then collapsed in a puddle of his own gore. He rose to one knee, fed a fresh magazine into the assault rifle, and scanned the area for enemies.
"All clear!" he called out.
The remaining ODSTs called in all clears as well. That opened the way to the lift, and Cortana was quick to seize on the opportunity. She activated the armor's communication system.
"Cortana to Echo 419. We made it to the gravity lift and are ready for reinforcements."
"Copy that, Cortana. Echo 419 inbound. Clear the drop zone."
"What's the matter?"
Sergeant Parker demanded of his troops, several of whom were looking longingly at the fast-approaching Pelican's running strobes.
"Never seen a UNSC dropship before? Keep your eyes on the rocks, dammit! That's where the bastards will come from!"
The Spartan waited for Echo 419 to unload the fresh Marines, waved them forward, and joined the surviving helljumpers on the lift pad.
"Looks like we made it,"
a private said, just before an invisible hand reached down to pluck him off the surface. Sergeant Parker looked up toward the belly of the ship and said,
"Aren't we the lucky ones?"
Then rose, as if suspended from a rope.
"Once we're in the ship, I can hone in on the captain's command neural interface," Cortana said. "The CNI will lead us to him. He'll probably be in or near the ship's brig."
"I'm glad to hear it," the chief answered dryly, and felt the beam pull him upward. Someone else yelled,
"Yee-haw!"
and vanished into the belly of the ship. The Covenant didn't realize it yet, but the Marines had landed. None of the humans understood, much less had the ability to predict, the Ringworld's weather. So when big drops of blood-warm rain fell on the mesa, it came as a complete surprise. The helljumpers grumbled as the water streamed off their faces, soaked their uniforms, and started to pool on the surface of the landing pad. McKay saw things differently, however. She liked the wet stuff, not just because it felt good on her skin, but because bad weather would offer the insertion team that much more cover.
"Listen up, people!" Sergeant Lister bellowed. "You know the drill! Let's shake, rattle, and roll!"
There weren't many lights, just enough so that people could move around without running into one another. But the fact that Silva had been on such missions himself meant that he could visualize what his eyes couldn't see. The troopers carried a full combat load, which meant that their packs were festooned with weapons, ammo, grenades, flares, radios, and medpacks, all of which would make noise unless properly secured. Noise would bring a world of trouble down on their heads during an op. That's why Lister passed through the ranks and forced each Marine to jump up and down. Anything that clicked, squeaked, or rattled was identified and restowed, taped, or otherwise fastened into place. Once all the troops had passed inspection, the Helljumpers would board the waiting dropships for a short flight to the point where the Pillar of Autumn had crashed. The Covenant had placed guards in and around the fallen cruiser, so McKay and her Marines would have to retake the ship long enough to fill the extensive shopping list that Silva had given her. According to Wellesley, Napoleon I once said, "What makes the general's task so difficult is the necessity of feeding so many men and animals." Silva didn't have any animals to feed, but he did have a flock of pelicans, and the essence of the problem was the same. With the exception of the ODST troopers who carried extra supplies in their HEVs, the rest of the Navy and Marine personnel had bailed out of the Autumn with very little in the way of supplies. Obtaining more of everything, and doing it before the Covenant launched an all-out attack on Alpha Base, would be the key to survival. Later, assuming that there was a later, the infantry officer would have to find a way to get his people the hell off the Ringworld. Silva's thoughts were interrupted as Echo 419 raced in over the mesa, flared nose up, and settled onto what had been designated as Pad 3. The assault on the Truth and Reconciliation had gone well so far, which meant that Second Lieutenant Delu, who had been assigned to follow along behind the rescue team and scoop up everything he could, was having a good evening. Each time Echo 419 dropped a load of troops, she brought enemy arms and equipment back in. Plasma rifles, plasma pistols, needlers, power packs, hand tools, comm equipment, and even food packs. Delu loved them all. Silva grinned as the lieutenant waved a team of naval techs in under the Pelican's belly to take delivery of the shade he and his team had lifted right out from under the Covenant's collective noses. That was the third gun acquired since the beginning of the operation, and would soon take its place within the Butte's steadily growing air defense system. Sergeant Lister shouted, "Tension!" did a smart-about face, and saluted Lieutenant McKay. She returned the salute and said, "At ease!" Silva walked out into the rain and felt it pelt his face. He turned to look at the ranks of black, brown, and white faces. All he saw were Marines.
"Most, if not all of you, are familiar with my office aboard the Pillar of Autumn. In the rush to leave it, it seems I left a full bottle of scotch in the lower left-hand drawer of my desk. If one or more of you would be so kind as to retrieve that bottle, not only would I be extremely grateful, I would show my gratitude by sharing it with a person or persons who managed to bring it in."
There was a roar of approval. Lister shouted them down.
"Silence! Corporal, take that man's name!"
The corporal to whom the order was directed had no idea which name he was supposed to take down, but knew it didn't matter. Silva knew the Helljumpers had been briefed and understood the true purpose of the mission, so he brought his remarks to a close.
"Good luck out there! I'll see you in a couple of days."
Except that he wouldn't see them. Not all of them. Good commanding officers had to love their men and still be willing to order their deaths if needed. It was the aspect of command he hated most. The formation was dismissed. The Marines jogged up into the back of the waiting Pelicans, and the dropship soon disappeared into the blackness of the night. Silva remained on the pad until the sound of the engines could no longer be heard. Then, conscious of the fact that every war must be won on the equivalent of paper before it can be won on the ground, he turned back toward the low-lying structure that housed his command post. The night was still young, and there was plenty of work left to do. The gravity lift deposited the rescue team 3 feet above the deck. They hung suspended for a moment, then fell. Parker gave a series of hand signals, and the ODSTs crept forward into the lift bay. The Covenant equivalent of gear crates, tapered rectangular boxes made from the shimmering, striated purple metal the aliens favored, were stacked around the high compartment. A pair of Covenant tanks, Wraiths, were lined along the right side of the bay.
the Master Chief moved forward toward one of the high metal doors that were spaced along the perimeter of the compartment. Parker gave the all-clear signal, and the Marines relaxed a bit.
"There's no Covenant here," one of them whispered. "So where the hell are they?"
The door was proximity activated, and as he neared the portal, it slid open and revealed a surprised elite. Without pause, the Spartan tackled the alien and slammed its armored head into the burnished deck plates. With luck, he'd finished the elite quietly enough. Another set of doors flashed open on the other side of the bay, and Covenant troops boiled into the compartment. A second Marine turned to the corporal who'd just spoken.
"No Covenant," he snarled, mocking his fellow trooper. "You just had to open your mouth, didn't you?"
Inside the Covenant ship, chaos reigned. The Master Chief charged ahead, and the rescue team fought their way through a maze of interlocking corridors, which eventually emerged into a large shuttle bay. A Covenant dropship passed through a bright blue force field as all hell broke loose. Fire stuttered down from a platform above. A Marine took a flurry of needles in the chest and was torn in half by the ensuing explosion. A grunt dropped from above and landed on a corporal's shoulders. The Marine reached up, got a grip on the alien's methane rig, and jerked the device off. The grunt started to wheeze, fell to the deck, and flopped around like a fish. Someone shot him. Numerous hatches opened into the bay, and additional Covenant troops poured in from every direction. Parker stood up and motioned his men forward.
"It's party time!" he bellowed.
He spun and opened fire, and was soon joined by all the rest. Within a matter of seconds, what seemed like a dozen different firefights had broken out. Wounded and dead, humans and Covenant alike, littered the deck. The Master Chief was careful to keep his back to a Marine, a pillar, or the nearest bulkhead. His Mjolnir armor and the recharging shield had